बिहारी जय राधा माधव जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी हे अशोर नंदन भज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा वनचारी यमुना तीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
एम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय. ऑल ग्लोरियसली असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियसली असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियसली असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियसली श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरांग. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत्. नष्टप्रैषभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी. सदा सेव्य श्रीमद्भगवतीकतायस्य श्रवणमात्रेण हरिश्चित्तं समाश्रयेत्. परमानन्दपातय प्रेमवर्षक्षराय ते सर्वदा सर्वसेव्याय श्रीकृष्णाय नमोऽस्तु मे. हरे कृष्ण. मॉर्निंग. वी आर इन द 10th कैंटो. Amazing. Most temples just stop and turn around, but somehow the devotees and really Kishore Kishori, I guess, have decided, no, it's time to charge into the nectar. So we find ourselves here. This is Canto 10, Chapter 22, and today we'll be doing verse 22. Before I start, I'd just like to ask for all of your blessings, especially you, Jitendriya Prabhu and Subal Prabhu. It can't be stated enough, especially with this chapter, because this is, it's one of the most controversial chapters of the Bhagavatam, actually, in its content. Early on in Westerners' discovery of this text, particularly the five chapters of the Rasa Lila, and this chapter made people completely discard it as some kind of weird, profane literature that was based around making God into something very vulgar, and they just had no way to grasp it. Because what's described here, especially without the help of commentaries from acharyas, from the outside, it's just unbelievable that one would attribute these activities to God. So in my feeble attempt to try to shed some light on this, I really need all of your blessings and prayers. So, cite the verse. Vidam pralabdas trapaya chapita prasto vita kri danavach chakarita vastani chaiva pahritan vastrani chaiva pahritan yatapyamum Dana Byasuyan Priyasanga Nivrita Dridham Pralabdhastrapaya Chahapita Prasto Vitakri Danavachakarita Vastrani Chaiva Pahritanyatapyamum Tana Vyasuyan Priyasanga Nirvrita. Please chant. Anabhyasuyan Priyasanga Nirvrita. And the word for word, Dridham. Thoroughly. Pralabdha. Cheated. Trapaya. Of their shame. Cha. And. Hapitaha. Deprived. Prastobitaha. Laughed at. Kridanavat. Just like toy dolls. Cha. And. Karitaha. Made to act. Vastrani. Their clothing. Cha. And. Eva. Indeed. Apahritani. Stolen. Ata api. Nevertheless. Amum. Toward him. Taha. They. Na abhyasuyan. Did not feel inimical. Priya. Of their beloved. Sangha. By the association. Nirvritaha. Joyful. In the translation, although the gopis had been thoroughly cheated, deprived of their modesty, ridiculed, and made to act just like toy dolls, and although their clothing had been stolen, they did not feel at all inimical towards Sri Krishna. Rather, they were simply joyful to have this opportunity to associate with their beloved. And the purport, which is technically by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, but it's just a cut and paste from the Krishna book. Srila Prabhupada comments, this attitude of the gopis is described by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he prays, my dear Lord Krishna, you may embrace me or trample me under your feet or you may make me brokenhearted by never being present before me. Whatever you like, you can do, because you have complete freedom to act. But in spite of all your dealings, you are my Lord eternally, and I have no other worshipable object. This is the attitude of the gopis toward Krishna. Om Agyanati Minandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapanantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare This is kind of a summation verse on this chapter, and it also it highlights the entire purpose of Shukadeva Goswami's telling of this chapter. So I think it'll be prudent to go back and explain a bit about what this chapter is and what it's meant to convey, and then just give a brief summary of what happens in the chapter to kind of understand what is being said here. Because externally, when we hear the verse, I'll just read it again. Although the gopis had been thoroughly cheated, deprived of their modesty, ridiculed, and made to act just like toy dolls, and although their clothing had been stolen, they did not feel at all inimical towards Sri Krishna. Rather, they were simply joyful to have this opportunity to associate with their beloved. When we hear this, especially the first half of it, there are many heavy words and many heavy accusations made against Krishna. And even our acharyas have commented, it's quite harsh the way he acted towards the gopis and the way this whole thing has transpired. So, like I said, I'd like to go back and speak about exactly what happened and why. First, I'd like to offer a little glorification for this particular commentary that the disciples of Srila Prabhupada have put together. At some points in my life, when I was reading the Bhagavatam and reading this part of the Bhagavatam, it was sometimes hard for me to wrap my head around why they decided to commentate in a particular way, especially being that we're this deep into the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada also gave the Krishna book. So sometimes, like if you look at the verse previous, and really the way they've kind of commented on this entire chapter, it seems like they hold back quite a lot, and even maybe move backwards. And for a long time, it was very difficult for me to understand why, and I kind of disagreed with that. Again, because we're so deep in the Bhagavatam, and the commentaries that Srila Prabhupada, in all of his books, told us that we could and should read, give much more detail and much more kind of wonderment, and they shed much more of a light on the intricacies of these pastimes. But when I was going over this chapter in its entirety in order to prepare for this class, it occurred to me why they commented in the way that they did. And I'm only speculating here because I don't know their actual reasons, but this really fit for me, and it definitely fits with Prabhupada's mood of commentation, in the way he also commentated on his books and reiterated certain points, and the way he progressed through his commentary style was, it's actually very tasteful to leave the higher things in our philosophy and deeper things up to the practitioner to seek out. It's very, very nice, and it leaves an opening for what our philosophy calls as rag, as this desire to actually understand these things. When you leave at the surface level a more basic understanding and let the person figure out how to find more. And we can see this over and over with Srila Prabhupada's books. He would leave in a sentence here or there. He would say, and this acharya has explained in more detail about this thing. Or if you want to know more, you can read this particular book. And he would leave out certain details, and even some of his godbrothers criticized him for that. And, you know, why aren't you giving more? Why aren't you giving? Why are you commentating on Bhagavad Gita, on these things? But I was able to develop a bit of appreciation for this commentary, particularly the stuff by his disciples, and for his own writing style, that it's very tasteful to leave things like that so that the practitioner actually can develop a desire. And that is the mark of readiness. To some degree, guru has to be there, and one should work under the guidance of the sadhus to see that these things are actually real. But that desire to hear, the actual desire to hear, rather than just to read through, next page, they told me this is what I should be doing. That's the qualification to enter into some of the more detailed explanations that are given of Krishna's pastimes. And so I just wanted to express that I can appreciate this commentary a lot more because they've written it in such a way that it allows for that. It allows for that kind of, what's the word? Not spontaneous, but a natural growth and a desire. When somebody finally, maybe they read this book for the second time, or, you know, however far they get through, and they finally think, wait a second, there must be more details. There must be more. I want to know more about this. Because that's the actual qualification to be able to know more, is that I want to know more. This is when it starts to shift into, whoa, this is the point of life. Then one can move in that direction. So my obeisances to the commentators, and of course to Srila Prabhupada, for doing things in such a way. Actually, Rupa Goswami wrote in the very same way in all of his works. He's one of the most, we could say, aside from the technical analysis of the science of rasa, he's one of the more conservative acharyas of all the Vaishnava lineages that have spoken about Krishna's intimate pastimes. He went into a china shop because it's so easy to develop a sahajya mentality when you look at the pastimes of Krishna and you just shine light on the very, very intimate stuff. And so if you read the books of Rupa Goswami, you see he goes so far in a pastime and then he stops. He stops. He goes so far in a pastime and then he stops. He dealt so expertly and so like a real connoisseur and like a real teacher in order to expound these things in such a way that it was very difficult to twist them. It's much more difficult to twist the words of Rupa Goswami than it is to twist the words of the Nimbarka Sampradaya, than it is to twist the words of the Vallabha Sampradaya, because they also have things. Actually, the Vallabha Sampradaya is written in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami says, Pushti Marg is the same thing as this Rag Marg that I'm speaking about in this book. And so, classically speaking, the Vallabha Sampradaya, the followers of Vallabhacharya, they also had this same idea of aspiring for Gopi Bhav as the highest echelon of their philosophy. But because it was spoken about so blatantly, because it wasn't given in such a way like Rupa Goswami gave it, actually so much scandal came about that in the 1800s, their philosophy had, their main pundits had to change their philosophy. And now you'll see all over India, they say, oh, we like child Krishna. We like Bal Krishna. You'll go to places which are in Govardhan, which are in Vrindavan, which are obvious places of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, and you'll see a deity of Bal Krishna there, where he doesn't even necessarily belong. And this is because there was a huge court case and there was big problems. Not because the philosophy was messed up, but because people had too much insight into things that were too pure for them and used them in the wrong way. And actually the pundits of the Vallabha Sampradaya in the 1800s, in order to stop themselves from being persecuted, they just said, actually, yes, this is bogus. We worship Bal Krishna. Our focus is on the childhood pastimes. So Rupa Goswami's expertise is in the fact that he was able to handle this in such a way, such a delicate thing in such a way, that he conveyed all of the meaning and gave a minimal ability to twist things. So again, to the Prabhupada's glory and his disciples' glory, to some degree, I can see coming through in that same mood and leaving intimate things up to the practitioner to actually desire to have, rather than just saying, yes, as a sadhana, you should just jump into this, run forward. So I just wanted to convey that. But now onto this actual chapter. So this chapter, for the majority of it, is a description of the Purvarag of the unmarried gopis. Now, Purvarag is a particular type of love. It's a type of separation, actually, which is characterized by the fact that one has not met the person that they love. So none of the gopis, to this point, have actually met Krishna in person. They've seen him from a distance, they've heard about him, but they haven't met him. And so there's a special type of desire that comes with that, and we call this Purvarag. It literally means the attachment before meeting. So the previous chapter, the Venu Gita, explains the Purvarag of the married gopis, like Radharani and Lalita and the older gopis. This chapter speaks about the Purvarag of the unmarried gopis, who are a bit younger, some years younger than Radharani and the other gopis that were speaking the Venu Gita. And because they're unmarried, naturally their desire is that, well, when I get married, I want this person who I've seen from a distance, who I've heard from, who I've heard about from the older gopis, I want him to be my husband. And so what they decide to do is they decide to perform this Katyayani Vrat, which is a local tradition in Vraj that a woman does in order to get a nice husband. So they say, okay, yes, let's do this. And so they all band together. They take each other's hands, and before the sun rises, they go out to the Yamuna. They sing songs about Krishna, and they take their bath in the freezing cold Yamuna. It gets quite cold in Vrindavan. So they take bath in the freezing cold water of the Yamuna, and they make a deity of Kadyayani out of sand, and they worship her with things that they've brought, aguru, sandalwood, little paraphernalia that they brought. Very simple worship, but they do this every day. For the entire month, they take Havishya, which is, some say it's unspiced khichdi, some say it's a mixture of yogurt and seasonal grains, but at any rate, there's no salt in it. So it's extremely austere, and it's extremely difficult for the body to live like that. It makes one emaciated and weak, and you know. So they go out and they do this. This is their vrat. And they're praying, oh, Katyayani Devi, you please give me Krishna as my husband. Please give me Krishna as my husband. With this special mantra that they're saying. And so they do this for most of the month. And then on the final day, to celebrate the completion of their vrat, because they have a lot of faith in this, it's a local tradition, it's they know that this will work. They have faith in Katyayani Devi. They know that this is a powerful thing. They invite Radharani and the rest of the gopis to join them for what is called the Avabrita Snan, which is a bath that's done at the end of a vow to mark the completion of the vow. And so on this particular day, this is what is described here. All of the gopis are gathered together, not just the unmarried gopis, but the married gopis as well are there. And they're all there, and they're playing in the water because it's a very joyful occasion for them, because they've completed this vow, and they have faith that the vow is going to work, so they're very happy, and they're playing. Our acharyas, they say also that their happiness, in spite of the freezing cold water that they're sitting in, is due to their absorption in Krishna. because all their playing is related to Krishna. Everything they're talking about with each other is related to Krishna. So the special prema that is coming from that relishment between them completely obfuscates their feelings of cold and the weakness that's coming from eating unspiced khichdi or yogurt and grains. It's completely decimating all of that. They don't have to worry about that. And then it gets interesting, because they're celebrating the end of this vow and they're eagerly awaiting the result, and then Krishna shows up. They don't see him at first, and he comes and he takes all of their clothes and climbs a kadamba tree. Some of our acharyas, they say that he came with enough friends that they all were able to snatch all the clothes, because there were a lot of gopis, so there were a lot of clothes. But he brought enough friends that he was able to snatch all the clothes and tie them to the kadamba tree. And then some say that he's Yogeshwareshwara, which is said in one of these verses, and because of his own power, he was just able to take all the clothes. Either way, he took all the clothes and he tied them up to the kadamba tree, and then he started laughing loudly. He started laughing. And so then the gopis, they heard his laughing, and they became embarrassed, someone's here. And they looked up and they saw Krishna there with all of his clothes. And so they said, you know, what are you doing? And so he laughing at them. He then lies to them and he says, what are all of you doing? I came here because I saw this kadamba tree from afar covered in beautiful flowers and fruits, and was thinking, how is it that kadamba tree has so many, it doesn't just have kadamba flowers on it. It looks so beautiful. So I came to see that, and now I see all these clothes are tied here. You know, what's going on here? And they explain, those are our clothes. And he says, how can they be your clothes if they're this high in this tree? And then they say, they're our clothes. Just see if they're men's or women's clothes. Just check. Are they men's or are they women's clothes? We're women, we're here. They must be our clothes. And he says, oh, well, they're obviously women's clothes because they're so colorful. But that's no matter. Are you the only women that wander in the forest? Are you the only ladies that wander in the forest? And then they say, we're the only ladies that are wandering in this forest today. And he says, well, what if they're demigods' clothes? What if they're the demigoddess's clothes? They come here, and then they say the demigoddesses don't come here to worship Katyayani. We're here, we're worshiping Katyayani. Those are our clothes. Give us our clothes back. And then Krishna says, you foolish girls. Oh, Vrajabala, you foolish village girls. You don't even know. The demigoddesses, they come every night. And they worship Katyayani here. They worship Durga here every night. And they left their clothes here because they knew that they would come back tomorrow and they would need fresh clothes after their worship. And so the Vrajagopis, he's too smart. And so he immediately starts playing with them and lying to them. And then he says, after arguing with them, he says, okay, if they're yours, then come and get them. I'll give them to you. I'm not, maybe you're telling the truth. Come and get them. But I can't touch them because I'm an honest person and I would never touch somebody else's clothes. I would never touch somebody else's things. I would never give somebody else's things and I would never take somebody else's things. So you have to come get them yourselves because I'm a dharmic person. I'm honest. I would never touch somebody else's things. So in this way, he's playing with them. He's lying about lying. Now I'm expanding on this because this is the nature of what we're hearing in this verse. Because Shukadev Goswami is saying the gopis had been thoroughly cheated, deprived of their modesty, they'd been ridiculed, they'd been made to act just like toy dolls. So to understand what's actually going on here and what Krishna is actually doing, it's very important. So he says, you come and get your clothes. And then they think, oh, he's just going to trick us even more. And he says, no, I'm not a liar. Actually, I've never lied. Ask any of these little boys that are with me. I don't lie. So Krishna, he lies about lying. And he continues. And then he jokes with them more and more and more. And he tells them so many different stories trying to convince them that if you come, you can come one at a time, or maybe come two or three at a time. At first he says, no, you should all come one at a time. And then he sees that that won't work. He says, you can come two or three at a time, or you can come all at once. But if you come, you have to come in such a way that you, because actually I'm dharmic and you're not dharmic, I don't want you to steal each other's clothes. Because if you only come one at a time and you don't come all at once, then the one gopi may take 3 or 4 saris and run off with them, because you're naturally fickle by nature. This is, you know, so come all at once. So he turns the story around on them. After all of this, it's described that the gopis, even though they're, to some degree, they're being tortured here because the water is very, very cold and he's come and stolen their clothes. It's said that they feel great happiness in their heart because they just did their vrata Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. And now Krishna is here teasing them like a husband teases a wife. He's making jokes with them in this same way. So even though externally so many difficult things are going on and it's a very embarrassing situation, actually if anybody else walked down the riverbank and saw what was going on, it would be a huge scandal. It would be a ridiculously big scandal for classical India, for Vedic society, for these things. It would have been more embarrassing than death for these young girls. And so the amount of anxiety that's there, or should be there, is huge. But the only thing they were feeling inside was complete ecstasy, because they were getting to speak to Krishna. This was the most intimate exchange they had with Krishna to this point in time. Everything else, again, this is pure virag, and this is actually the fructification of their desires in pure virag. Everything else was from a distance. When you don't know somebody, especially in classical Vedic society, and you're a girl and the other person is a boy, or you're a boy and the other person is a girl, you are not allowed to just walk up to them and speak to them. You can't just say, oh yeah, I like this person, let me just go hang out with them. So the only thing that you can do is you can see them from afar, or you can maybe ask somebody who knows them. But even then, you can't ask them very intimate things. Because if that person thinks that it understands why you're asking, then it's also a big scandal and it's a big problem. So the level of intimacy that they're getting now with Krishna in having this exchange is much more than anything they've experienced. And so they're very, very happy inside. But the water is cold. So they start to shiver. Our acharyas, they say that the shivering externally is caused by the cold water, and internally it's caused by the gopis' anurag increasing and their sheer joy that I just described a little bit of at meeting Krishna is starting to really catch hold of them. And so they start to shiver, they start to shake. But externally speaking, and for the purpose of the pastime moving forward, they're shivering because the water's really, really cold, and they're up to their necks because they're embarrassed, because they're naked and Krishna has all of their clothes. So then they resorted to political tactics, because the gopis, they're the cleverest of people. Our acharyas, they say that these girls, it should not be known that they blatantly told Krishna what their desire was, because they're worshipped by the cleverest of people. So what to speak of their cleverness? They would never reveal openly, because that's not the nature of prema. They would never reveal openly that we want you as our husband. It doesn't work that way. And so they resort to some political tactics in order to get their clothes back. First, they use sama, which means glorification. It means kind of flattering the person who you're trying to impress and who you're trying to make a deal with in order to get them to appease you and in order to get them to agree to your proposal and come to a compromise. So they say, oh Krishna, you are Nanda Gopasuta, you're the son of Nanda Maharaj, please think with some sense. You are a very righteous person, you come from a very righteous background, you're the son of the king. People will think it's a big scandal if they hear about what you're doing. Just come to your senses, you're a very good person. We're just foolish girls, please give us our clothes back, please. We're stupid, whatever we said before about you, we don't know what we say, we're just foolish girls, please, just give us our clothes back. It doesn't work. Krishna shows indifference. Then they use the next one, dana, which means to give. So what can the gopis offer? They don't have clothes, they don't have anything, they're stuck in the river up to their necks. So they say, Krishna, actually we're your maidservants, please. You know, don't treat your maidservants cruelly like this. Please give us our clothes back. Indifference. Then they become a little bit angry and they use bheda. So there are two steps in this bheda. Bheda means to divide. It means to create dissension. or to instill fear in someone. So the first step in Veda is they threaten Krishna with the consequence of future problems, of future reactions for what they're doing. So they say, oh Krishna, this is wrong what you're doing. You're stealing and you're trying to see the naked bodies of young women. Why are you doing this? This is only going to be bad for you. This is completely against Dharma. There will be serious future repercussions if you do this. Please just give us our clothes back. And after realizing Krishna doesn't care about that at all, he doesn't mind about it one bit, then they get a little angrier and they say, if you don't give us our clothes back now, we're going to go tell Nanda Maharaj. Some commentators say they're saying, we're going to go tell Kamsa. But we're going to go tell Nanda Maharaj. So immediately, okay, you don't like future fear, you don't mind about what's going to happen in your next life or what will happen in some years. Right now, this day, if you don't give us our clothes back, we'll go tell Nanda Maharaj and then you'll really have a problem to deal with. And still, Krishna's not only unfazed, but he, Govinda, uses their own words to completely distort what they said and use it against them. The word Govinda, actually it has many meanings. When we read the Bhagavatam and when we see the Acharya, the commentaries of the Acharyas, we probably get 20 meanings for the word Govinda and 20 meanings for the word Krishna. And there are so many meanings to Krishna's different names. So in this case, Shukadeva Goswami calls Krishna Govinda to mean the master of words. He who has words and speech under his complete control. So he takes the four things that they said and he switches them and uses them against the gopis in order to completely defeat them. So they said, you're the son of the king, please act just according to your nature, just act righteously. And he says, I'm the son of the king, so nothing I do can be wrong. Everyone in Vraj loves me, so what is the question of me doing anything wrong? And then they say, we're your maidservants, please be nice to us. And he says, well, if you're my maidservants, then do what I say. You're saying you're my maidservants, so I'm telling you to do something. You're violating Dharma because you're not listening to your master. And then, because they said, you're going to incur so much sinful reaction by doing these things. He says, what do I have to worry about that? You said I'm the son of the king. The son of the king can do no wrong. There can't be anything wrong with what I do. The son of the king is above the normal laws of morality. And then the final one, we'll tell Nanda Maharaj. He says, Nanda Maharaj loves me so much. He won't do anything even if he finds out. What can he do? What can the king of Vraj do? And so the gopis are completely, completely defeated. And finally, they give in. Not completely yet, but they stand up out of the water. And they cover their private parts because they're naked. And Krishna is so pleased with this because he's seen the level of surrender. Again, for a young lady, especially in Vedic culture, to give up her modesty is the most painful thing. It's much more painful than death. It's not something that we have such a view on now in the world because society is twisted in quite a profane way. But for a young lady in Vedic culture, for something like this to happen is worse than death. She would rather die. Actually, the gopis, they say that internally they're thinking, we may as well give in because even if we do drown ourselves right now, because that's the other option, they can either stand up or they can drown themselves in the Yamuna. They say the pain of drowning will not occlude the pain of not having union with Krishna, of not meeting Krishna. So we may as well just give in to his request, because even if we drown ourselves, that pain will still stay with us. So they give up. And they stand up. But then, because Krishna is Rasaraj, because Krishna only wants to relish love between him and his devotees, it's not enough. So he pushes more, and he pushes more, and he then deceives them to the ultimate degree. He's already deceived them quite a lot. He's lied to them at least six or seven times, you know, 10 times. He said this thing, that thing. He's twisted their words and used their own words against them. He's completely taken advantage of their, you know, very, very weak position, stuck where they are. And then finally, he just completely deceives them. And he says, actually, your vrat that you've been doing, this thing that you've been doing, is completely useless because you did it wrong. You're naked in a river. You've offended Varuna. You've offended Katyayani, who you've been praying to. You've offended Narayan even. You've offended all the demigods. You've even offended Narayan. So everything you're doing is pointless. Why are you doing this? What is the point? And so he instilled fear in them like this. And then, because again, Krishna is just too smart, he said, actually, I can think of a way that you can atone for this. If you pay your obeisances to me, because remember, everyone in Vraj knows, Garga Muni said, I'm just like Narayan. I'm just like Narayan. He's not Narayan, but he's like Narayan. That's the conception of the Vrajvasis. They think he has all the qualities of Narayan. They think he's some sort of amazing demigod who's taken birth because of Nanda Maharaj's piety. So he says, remember, I'm just like Narayan. So if you pay your obeisances to me, you can be forgiven of your offenses to Narayan and all the other demigods. And he says, so just raise your hands above your head and pay your obeisances. Raise your hands above your head and pay your obeisances. And the gopis are thinking, this is too much. And so they pay their obeisances like this, one hand. But our acharyas, they say in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's quoted from some other ancient pramanam, that you can pay your obeisances with one hand. So Krishna says, this isn't good. This is an inferior way of paying obeisances. You can't do this. So then they do with two hands, but they do with two hands down here. And Krishna says, no, no, no. This is also inferior. Raise your hands above your head. Pay obeisances like this. And so finally, it's described that because they felt so bad, because they felt they had lost everything, they wouldn't get the result of their vrat. Katyayani Devi would be angry with them. Everything had gone awry. And they thought, our only hope, because all the results of this yajna that we've been doing, of this tapa that we've been doing, are spoiled. Our only hope is to please the result that we're actually praying for, because we're praying for Krishna as our husband. So at least let us please Krishna. That's all we can do in this situation. At least if he's happy, then something will come of this. And so they raise their hands and they pay obeisances like this. Actually, before that point, Krishna, just to highlight the seeming cruelness of Krishna here, because it's important for this particular story, especially with the verse that Prabhupada has quoted, or his purport, so to speak, on this verse. He said, and if you do this, I'll give you your lower garments. The implication is, I'll keep your saris, I'll keep the upper garment, but I'll at least give you your lower garment, and then you'll have something. So they even surrendered on that. They even surrendered just with this, you know, half a payment. I'll give you some relief from your shame. So they raised their hands, and then Krishna became so unbelievably pleased, because actually this was all just a test to see what their love would be like, to see how strong their love actually was for him. And they passed with flying colors. They passed every single mark. As Shukadeva Goswami says here, that although they'd been cheated, deprived of their modesty, and ridiculed, they'd been made to act just like toy dolls, their clothing had been stolen, they did not feel at all inimical towards Sri Krishna. Actually, their mental predisposition, while all this was happening, was never to think that Krishna had done anything bad to them. Even though they knew he was lying, they knew the clothes were theirs, they never thought in a nasty way, this person is such a liar, and why do I even care about him? They never thought, why is he taking advantage of me so much? This is not what somebody who loves somebody does. They never thought any inimical thoughts about Krishna. Actually, as we see in the pastime, everything that Krishna did only served to increase their love for him. This is a very important point to understand. Because this is the nature of prema, and this is what Shukadeva Goswami is elucidating by explaining this particular chapter of the Bhagavatam. By speaking this chapter, he's showing that when someone actually has prema, no matter what the person that they love, and prema means for Krishna, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, prema means for Krishna. No matter what the beloved does to the person who has prema for the beloved, it's taken as happiness. Actually, I just want to read something that's from the purport to this verse by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, the conclusion is that when one is considered dear or priya, whatever that dear one does is experienced with pleasure, even if it gives pain. This is the nature of prema. Actually, in one of his other books, Rupa Goswami, he explains that the definition of prema means that when love is in such a state that it has every reason to break, it has obstacles, problems, all forms of obstructions are there for that love, and it still doesn't break. This is the definition of prema. And then we come to Srila Prabhupada's purport here, and he just says something very simple. He just quotes a verse. He says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this verse. This attitude of the gopis is described by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he prays, and it's this last verse of Shikshashtakam. This verse, he says, my dear Lord Krishna, you may embrace me or trample me under your feet, or you may make me brokenhearted by never being present before me. Whatever you like, you can do, because you have complete freedom to act. But in spite of all of your dealings, you are my Lord eternally, and I have no other worshipable object. So when love is steeped to such a degree that nothing can possibly break it, even the beloved coming and it can't be broken. This is prema. This is the prayojan of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us, that we have to deeply, 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 deeply aspire to one day have. We have to aspire to serve devotees that have some inkling of this, some knowledge of it. We have to aspire to have it ourselves by hearing about it. This is the nature of prema, and this is the point of this chapter. Actually, the rest of this chapter is dedicated to the beginning of the wives of the yogic brahmanas pastime, which elucidates more or less the same thing and some other details, but kind of the same thing in a gradation of love. And so it's very important to understand the nature of this thing and what it means, because on a practical level, when we zoom out, this pastime illustrates that Krishna is going to test us beyond whatever our conception is. The test is always going to be one or two or three steps beyond that. We may think I'm giving everything. If we look at the Vraj Gopis, they're giving everything. They were doing this intense rut at a young age. They were emaciated from eating very little. They were going and taking a bath. I mean, my God, you know, I've taken cold showers, and I can't imagine doing it when I was 6 years old and trudging out there. It's intense what they were doing, and they were giving whatever they could. And Krishna came and said, let's see if you can give a little more. Let's see if you'll give more. Will you give more? And then once they gave more, he said, okay, a little more though. Can you give a little more? So this is also the life of a sadhaka. One of our acharyas, they comment that Krishna said to the gopis that actually, even though you're siddha, even though you're perfected devotees, you have acted like sadhakas in this pastime, just in order to show other sadhakas how this is going to transpire. And so we can infer from this that what happens here, obviously not the exact physical way it happens, but the mechanism behind it, is also going to happen one day in the lives of each one of us as a sadhaka. This churning, because that's what Krishna does. That's actually the only thing he's interested in, is churning out more love from each one of our hearts. He's interested in doing that only. Everything else, he doesn't want, whatever these other things are. Because what else can you give? That's the only thing that the jiva has, actually, is the ability to love. And so that's the only thing that we can offer to Krishna. And Krishna is only interested in that. Therefore, he may take away this thing and that thing, and he may take away so many things. But he's taking away so that he can actually give himself. But one has to be ready for that. One has to be a worthy recipient of that gift, which means one also has to want to give oneself. So it's 8:25 now. I apologize if the class seemed a bit rushed. I just kind of studied all morning. If there's any fault here, then please correct me. You're a group of wonderful Vaishnavas, practically all my seniors. And if there's anything that was nice, then Tad Guru Reva Me Nahi. It's my gurus, it's not mine. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, or corrections?
Thank you, Jola Prabhu. Class was very nice. All glories to Sachinanda Maharaj. Hearing the translation of the verse, the first thing that came to mind is, without just mentioning the class, without the acharyas, what in the beginning of the class actually, without the comments of the acharya, what shot anyone have to understand this type of thing? And I was thinking, especially nowadays, you know, just the translation of the verse in which, you know, from the perspective in the age of right now what the women are following now, it's a name that they're Me Too, the Me Too era.
Me Too, oh yeah.
That, you know, they're standing against, you know, the discrimination and abuse and denigration and use of women in society. And this will be like, forget about it. It have all the red flags of chauvinism and all these things, you know. And on the top of that the gopis they feel happy about it. So it's like, you know, what kind of society is that? So, and especially, you know, this attributed to God. So God is the ultimate, you know, chauvinist, you know, like that. Or the supreme chauvinist, you know. So, and the fact is that because in this world we don't have experience of prema, we have experience of lust.
Yeah.
You know, passing by love. Then it's very difficult to understand from the material perspective this exchange of pure love and how, as you say, it's churning and churning and churning on both sides. So it's quite something. Yes.
You brought something to my mind. It's really not, I didn't even think about that aspect of it. That yes, it's like, for the political state of the world and kind of the social state of the world right now, it's even more kind of volatile. What to speak of these Indologists that were finding this stuff in the 1800s, you know, the 1700s, when they were translating the things. They were abhorred by the idea that God could be doing these things. But now, in the state of the world, you know, people would be so abhorred, actually, if they saw this in the wrong context. And then I thought it's quite interesting that actually, especially in our movement, because our movement is, if I'm not wrong, it's a majority of ladies in our movement. And especially if you see like all of the retreats and all of the kind of programs that are designed to go deeper in Krishna consciousness, if I remember the statistics right, it's something like 60 or 70% women. It's very much more ladies than men. And so as you were saying that, I thought and I wondered, wait, why is that? Because it would seem that ladies would have more of a hang up here than men would. But actually, it's the other way around somehow, seemingly paradoxically. And I think that's because and Prabhupada also said this, and a couple of his godbrothers said this, that women just have a natural kind of predisposition to surrender. And they have a much more easy time because they don't have that Purusha Abhiman that a man has. A man really wants to be the one in the center of existence. Women also have that to some degree, and it comes out in more subtle ways, but they don't have it in the same way that somebody in a man's body has. They have much more of a surrendering mentality. They don't have to be the best. They don't have to be, although now, the way the Western world is going, it's coming out more and more, but just the way the Abhimans are for the different kind of, the two different genders, women, they don't need that recognition as much as a man craves it. It's just not there. That's why when the society is balanced, women don't even mind that anyway. It's not my place or desire. It's not even what they feel that they need to go out and provide and be the strong one. Now everything is topsy-turvy because nobody's qualified for anything, and men are making a horrible mockery of what it means to be a man, and women are doing the same thing, and so everything's twisted. But I think even with all of that twisting, that when ladies actually become interested in this philosophy and this practice, that they have a sense of what a woman's desires actually are. And so when they hear these things, it doesn't create that reaction of, this is horrible. Rather, because this is the deepest insight into female psychology in existence. That they sense that there's something so real about this and right about this. And I think that's why we see so many women in our movement gravitating towards that, becoming more advanced, becoming, you know, moving in that direction. Sorry, that was just kind of a stream that came out when you spoke the way you said what you said.
That's very true. And just thinking as you're speaking that in one sense it's a testament of the association of our Vaishnava acharyas that we have, starting with Srila Prabhupada, that we hear this and we relish it to no end, you know, this narrations of the Bhagavatam, and because we're being guided and we're given that entrance by the acharyas, so under their protection then we're able to relish and appreciate and nourish ourselves from this and aspire, as you say, for that, you know, position of purity. And on the other hand, then you have bad association, you know, when you listen to the Bhagavatam spoken by a non-devotee is as poisonous, especially impersonalists or like that, offenders, it becomes poisonous to one's. So I'm just thinking, just recently I dealt with one devotee friend who came across, because there's a lot of the internet of Srila Prabhupada being criticized as chauvinist and also as racist.
Yeah.
You know, because Prabhupada made comments, you know, based on Vedic culture, social commentaries a lot, you know, in the Bhagavatam. And if you don't see, you know, if you take things out of context and you don't see, you know, Prabhupada's teachings, you lose sense of the essence and the whole principles behind, and you take externally a particular comment, you know, that is there in the Vedas, and then become completely confused. Yeah. So you have people that have been in contact with ISKCON. Devotees, some of them, you know, devotees who have lost it completely, coming into contact with this type of translations and purports, you know, like that, or commentaries on on Vedic culture like that. There's particularly this group that is just bringing about several things that Prabhupada comments about women, and several things that Prabhupada comments about African Americans, you know, yeah. African, you know, black men, you know, like that. And they can pass it. They can pass through that.
Yeah, it's their great misfortune. It makes me reflect on, I'm happy to have this little bit of a deeper understanding of why Prabhupada wrote his commentaries the way he did also. To kind of create that shield, that people who have that, like you said, kind of that poisonous mentality, they're only able to come so far. And because they're absorbed in that, they're absorbed in the politics, they're absorbed in the racism, whatever it is, they're absorbed in all the external things that actually a Vaishnava has no desire for. If we look at Prabhupada's life, we look at the way he did the things that he did, even he made some comments the way he did, he never acted in such a way. Even if he made strong comments against African Americans, like there's one place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when he goes into the Jharkhand forest, and it's like, it's quite an intense, they're intense statements. And they're, like you said, they're informed by Vedic understanding. But still, Prabhupada was such a Vaishnava and so compassionate, he didn't apply that in real life. He didn't say, oh, you're like this, and so you shouldn't go on the altar, or you should, you know, you can only come so far in this life. There was never that limiting thing there, you know. So the way his actions were always spoke louder. And I see the way he wrote that people that do get caught up on those things, because that's the nature of this world, it's always going to be twisted and controversial and difficult. Even if somebody speaks very purely, somebody can just copy and paste their words and make it controversial. That's literally what the news industry, that's their whole business, is to take things that are ordinary and copy and paste them in such a way that it makes what this person said into a scandal. You know, anyone who's been interviewed for anything realizes that. You see what comes out on the other side of the interview, and the way they cut out some of your paragraphs and rearrange some of your paragraphs. You said something you'd never actually said. So of course they can take even somebody like Srila Prabhupada and twist what he said. But people who are absorbed in that, they're spending all their time doing that, and then even they're trying to look at, you know, these particular books, and they can't read between the lines. They can't see that Prabhupada has left it in such a way that one actually has to develop a little bit of a desire in a pure way in order to actually go into that realm. I think it's nice. It shows the brilliance of Srila Prabhupada that he could see all these things would happen. It would go like this. People would criticize.
Not only Srila Prabhupada's, you know, I mean, it's just like the Bhagavatam is a Purusha, the words are perfect. They're faultless, they're spotless. Mm. Similarly, Prabhupada's teachings are spotless. Yeah. So, you know, in the same way that one may misinterpret this verse in a particular way of, you know, seeing it from a particular perspective, similarly, Prabhupada's, everything that came out of Prabhupada is like the Bhagavatam, it's spotless. Mm. And then it's from us side to understand Prabhupada's teaching, Prabhupada's teachings as a whole. So, and it's a matter of time. Everybody has his different timing in one sense, you know. But the fact is that is there in the absolute platform. Prabhupada speaks. His achar and his prachar is just like Chaitanya says of Haridasa Thakur, no? Mm. Your prachar and your achar is perfect. You know?
I was thinking, have you ever heard the expression, we don't see things as they are, but as we are?
Yes. In the Vedas they say, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. Same thing. You see the world the way it is in your mind.
Yeah. And also I heard that women want to be attracted, want to attract, and men want to be admired. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, a song by Bob Dylan, he says, making you think you're the one to do the things that have never been done. Meanwhile, life goes on all around you. You know, like you're the center. And then George Harrison had that album called Wonderwall. Did you ever see it? It's this brick wall, and then this Englishman's walking down the street in like the 18th century, and then there's a one brick missing out of the wall, and on the other side of the wall, it shows the gopis in the, you know, swimming and stuff like that. So if I find it, I'll show it to you. I thought that was interesting, you know.
Yeah, please.
Hare Krishna.
There's one last small thing on this that you were touching on, Sue. Well, just an observation. I noticed that when Prabhupada was around, nobody was able to criticize Prabhupada in that time. Even they tried in interviews, and Swamiji, you say this about women and that, and immediately they would have to be quiet. Because Prabhupada was just so unbelievably transcendentally intelligent, and also was just such a person, and his actions just spoke so deeply that anyone who tried to come with some malintention, they were just captivated after 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 minutes, and they realized this person is just amazing. And so, yeah, squabbles will be there after the acharya leaves, because then, you know, the nature of the world is that. Quarrel and hypocrisy. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Shri Kishore Kishori ki jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadramarani ki jai. Shri Shri Gaurani Tai ki jai. Shri the Prabhupada ki jai. Vaishnava Bhaktivrinda ki jai.